You're listening to TCRG to CEO Radio with your host, Courtney J., TCRG.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of TCRG to CEO Radio. It's your host, me, Courtney J., TCRG, and welcome back for another episode. Today we're actually doing our very first look back or revisit episode with Lauren Carol Bolger, who is a studio owner from Washington State here in the United States, and she will be returning to the podcast next week to give us some updates on what she's been up to since we recorded this episode in 2019. So I wanted to make sure that everyone had the chance to listen to Lauren's story 5 years ago so that when she gives us her update from this year, everyone is current with her story and we can see what kind of things have changed for her and draw some inspiration, because I love sharing other studio owners' stories. So I wanted to make sure that I posted this episode just in case you're new to the show or hadn't had the chance to listen. I know some people are on a big look back through time, going all the way back to the really early episodes, but in case you're not there yet, I wanted to make sure everyone had the chance to listen. So please enjoy this look back from 2019, and you can look forward to hearing Lauren's current story on the podcast next week. Until then, enjoy. So welcome everybody. We have today's guest, Lauren, who's here to talk about being a studio owner and teaching and also having a full-time career. So thanks for doing this, Lauren.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be able to talk about everything.
Yeah. So I don't know whether all our listeners are familiar with you or you're kind of out of the Seattle, Washington State area. I don't know any other areas in Washington State other than Seattle. But if you want to tell everybody kind of how you got into Irish dance in the first place and kind of what your journey's been like so far, that would be awesome.
Great. So I started dancing in Spokane, Washington, which is the eastern side of the state, which should be closer to Idaho. And that's like the other big city in Washington, but still small. But I started there when I was 7 with the Heron Irish Dancers, the Heron School of Irish Dance. And actually my mom started dancing first. I wanted to do ballet because I was inspired by Mary Kate and Ashley. I was like that.
Who wasn't though, that woman when they were our age?
And they did some video with the New York City Ballet. And I was like, I want to be like them. I want to do ballet. And my mom said, why don't you wait a year and we'll see if you're still interested. And she actually started dancing for fitness. There was like an adult class and she just wanted to do some fitness stuff. And I watched it and I was like, that looks so much fun. All the jumping. So she actually started teaching me my first steps to get me into the school. And then I just took to it. I loved it. I think I told my dance teacher at a very young age that I wanted to teach. So it was a small school and I just had one dance teacher. Her name's Caitlin. And I just, teaching's in my family as well. Like my dad's a teacher. My grandfather was a teacher for a little bit, like just past cousins. It's just a big thing. And I remember telling her, yeah, I want to teach. And so she really nicely gave me opportunities, like even before I was in high school, to help like sub for classes, which now as a teacher, I'm like, oh, that's a lot. I really appreciate her being willing to do that. But definitely a comfort zone I don't know if I have yet. But then she ended up having 2 children. And on her second child, I helped cover for her maternity leave. And I was in high school at the time. And I really loved that. I just loved teaching. I knew I always wanted to pursue dance, but I was also always really interested in history. So when I was applying for colleges, I was looking for colleges either where it was a really good history school, or I found the University of Limerick with the Irish music and dance degree, which I guess it's no longer exactly called that, but at the time that's what it was. And then I applied to a bunch of schools and it was between 2 schools, between UL and I think it was William & Mary. And I didn't get into William & Mary, but I got into UL. So that was it. That was my decision. I decided I'd go to UL to do dancing. I always knew then coming out of it that I wanted to start my own school. I also always knew coming out of it that to be able to get another job, I always wanted another job.
Yep.
I loved history and I wanted to do something with it, that I knew I needed to get a master's. Because unfortunately with a degree in Irish music and dance, kind of narrow what you can do with that. So I knew I wanted to get a master's out of that. So I decided I would get a master's. First, it was going to be a master's in history, but I volunteered at a local museum in Spokane, and I had a really great mentor who said if I wanted to be able to do anything bigger in a museum, because I really loved museums, that I should do museum studies. So I kind of had that track for myself planned out. And let's see, then in my third year of college, backtracking a little bit. In college, I transferred school, so I started dancing with the Fleming Ball School, which, you know, Courtney, you dance with Linda as well. And Linda was a really great mentor. I loved being able to dance under her and learn from her. And then in my third year, during my co-op, which is where you get to do work placement for those of you who aren't familiar with UL's system, I actually taught with Linda and I studied for my TCRG. So I decided, I always had it planned that I was going to get it as early as possible. So I got it. I took the test in my third year of college and I passed. So I found that out in my fourth year of college. So I had that upon graduation.
That's pretty awesome. I didn't realize you did it while you were still at UL.
Yeah.
Props. That's not easy.
It was definitely stressful. I will say that year was challenging, but it was great. I really enjoyed it. Linda worked with me. I also worked with Michael Ryan. He helped a lot. I don't think I would have gotten through without him. He would take some of the classes and he would just, because he was studying for his adjudicators at that time as well. So he would have me teach the Kayleys during class and then he would like critique me. And it was nice. Also for him to re-remember the Kayleys, I think, too. So, and then I was studying with another dancer at the time too, and he brought us out to his studio and brought in students and had us teach all the Kayleys.
So, nice.
And in my head, I was like, if I can teach in front of Michael Ryan,
right,
in front of an adjudicator and examiner. So, that's how I got through it. I did dance in one exam as well prior, which I think was actually your exam. I didn't dance for you, but
yeah.
And that was really helpful just to see what examiners are looking for. And I think what I took out of that was that they're not there to criticize you. They're there to really help you. And I think they're more on your side than what you think.
Yes, I found that to be true as well, that they really were rooting for you. Whereas everyone I think comes in with the idea that they don't want to pass you.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, and as long as you're confident, I think, and if you're willing to admit a mistake confidently, you'll be okay.
Yep.
That's my best advice. So then I decided I would pursue my master's. So I actually moved back to Washington State to do that. I went to the University of Washington here for a master's in museology. Right before I left, I actually got engaged. So I married, my husband is from Ireland. We met in college. And so we did a little bit of a long distance there for a while for the 2 years I was in my master's here. And during that time, I set up my school in the greater Seattle area. I was conscious, and I am currently conscious of where other schools are. So there are other big schools in Seattle, but I am currently located in towns, like outlying towns that the schools aren't teaching in. So I teach in Edmonds and Mukilteo. Those are little areas in Valley Terrace. So I'm very conscious of that. I think that was from Ireland. I really learned that, like, respect.
Yeah. And that's true. It's not something that I really think of on a daily basis, but I mean, if we think of how many schools were in the Limerick area, no one was really on each other's toes, or there was that mutual respect amongst the teachers.
Yeah. And I think that's so important. Personally. So I'm really careful about that, but I slowly started building the school while I was doing my master's. And the plan was to have it going well enough that when I graduated, I could fall back on it in case I didn't get a job immediately. Yep. That fear is always there when you're looking for a job. And then I did get a job at a museum. So I work in an art museum right now in museum education, which fits pretty well with some of my goals. I originally wanted to go more into exhibit design, so I was really interested in that, which for me felt like it fit almost into choreographing, because the way I would think about a dance how yeah. I would choreograph it. It's a lot on how you would design a space. Like, you're thinking about how the person would interact with it, what they're doing in all the stages, your start, your finish, how people are moving through.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. It is. It's like a visual representation of a choreography, except it's artwork.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, and so my thesis work was actually in how to design spaces for dance. So I looked at how to create an exhibit that features dance but allows interactivity so that people could actually understand it really well. And currently in my job and kind of where I'm going in my career, my whole goal is to be an advocate for the performance arts. So I firmly believe the performance arts have the potential and should be given the space in museums, just like visual art should. So that's a big area that I've been really working in as well.
That's awesome. Careers like I didn't even know existed.
Yeah, I know.
I bet you've seen the like R Steps exhibit in New York City that Gene Butler was working on. I've only seen it online, but
yeah,
that sounds like something that would be up your alley.
Oh yeah, I love all. There's one museum in New York that I've been really wanting to visit, and it's actually the National Dance Museum as well.
Okay.
And that one has been definitely on my list. I know that I think MoMA is doing a lot more with the performance arts. They've been bringing a lot more of that in. Yeah, so those things are very interesting to me on how you can incorporate it. There's definitely a struggle. This is going into my interest in the museum field, but there's definitely a struggle of bringing in the performance arts because you have the issue of that a dancer or any performer cannot perform constantly throughout the day.
Right.
So you have that issue of how you are going to display the art form.
Yep.
And then there's the issue of when you display it as a recording, you're losing a bit of that context of what it would be like live.
True.
So there is a struggle there, but it's a really interesting area that I could probably go on.
Yeah, no, it really is. And I think everyone who's listening will really find that interesting too, because even if, like for me, I'm not in any way visually artistic, but at the same time, it's like the arts are the arts. So there's some part of that like creative mind that everybody has in them.
Yeah.
So yeah. And as you're retelling your story, like there's actually so many more like parallels between like both of our paths than I even realized. People that are listening to this may have figured out that we were at UL at the same time, not the same class, but we overlapped in our time there. And how did you find that the program helped you either become a better teacher or gave you, I guess, more opportunities as a dancer, or just kind of your general takeaways from the program?
So the first big takeaway that I took from it was developing more of my artistic voice as a dancer. And I think growing up dancing and focusing so much on the competitive side, I did, the school I went to, it did focus a lot on the performance side as well. So I will say that I loved performing, but for me, competition was always a way to ensure that I knew what I was doing. And yep. It was like, yeah, you're good enough. You know, hopefully you're good enough.
Yeah.
Do other things. But I really, at the end of the 4 years, had more of an idea of the dance as an art form rather than just a competitive art form, which I really appreciated. And I appreciate that there is a difference to that. I, as a dance teacher, then see it as a necessity to compete, because I think that, like I experienced myself, you need to ensure that you know what you're doing before you're going to make any artistic choices. That's my viewpoint, but I enjoyed being able to kind of go through 4 years and then finally figure out like, well, what is my style as a dancer? Like, what am I drawn to more? What music like evokes more meaning to me or more interest to me choreographically? And that was really interesting. And so when I started developing my school, that's been a big part of it for me, that I have the eventual goal of when I get my students older and more talented, that I want, or skilled, I shouldn't say talented, I'm sorry. They all have natural talent. More skilled, that then I can teach them to be more artists with it as well, and try to pull a little bit away from that side that I think is going a little bit sporty, and bring it back more to the traditional art form. Then the second big thing I will say is just exposure to different teachers. I got to work with so many different teachers that influenced not only my teaching style, but my own dancing as well. That taught me so much dancing wise, and I just got to see so much. I got to hear so much music.
Yep.
I did not have the appreciation for the music when I walked in.
Neither did I.
Yeah. It's amazing how it develops in over those 4 years. So, and that is something I miss, actually, being on the West Coast. We do not have the music scene that obviously that you would have in Ireland. But I think even in other areas where there's a stronger Irish diaspora, we just don't have that in Seattle, which I miss.
Yeah, no, and a lot of the UL alumni that I've talked to also appreciate just being able to be exposed to different teaching styles. And a lot of them either plan to go on and teach or are already teaching. And I know for me, it was very helpful because I was kind of like you, where I had only had one teacher previously. Mm-hmm. So I only knew one way. And then you go and you have, you know, all these teachers and you take the parts that you like and figure out how to make it your own. And then the parts that you don't like, you learn something from that too.
Yeah. Yes, I agree with all of that.
And then your school. So how is that going?
It is going well. We're going into our fourth year, actually, starting up. And this last week, I just finished our dance camps. So physically, I'm a little tired.
Yeah.
It's definitely a lot on the body to do, but it's very enjoyable. I'm also currently recovering from, I'm finishing up from a meniscus tear.
Ooh.
So this week was a big test on whether or not I could jump again, which I can. So that's exciting.
Yay.
But it's definitely, I think when you take any time off from an injury, it's surprising on how fast your legs lose muscle. So I was just teaching trebles and I was like, yeah, staying off your heels is really hard when you haven't done it for a while. But, oh, sorry. Yeah. That's, so school's going well. And then so I teach in, 3 different locations. I had to think in my head there. So I teach, we don't have our own studio right now. I'm just renting from other spaces, which is challenging, but also I think with where the school is right now, it's where I'm happiest. It's definitely starting to reach the point where I'm planning on probably in the next 2 years trying to start renting our own space.
Yep.
But I teach in Edmonds, which is a small little town, which is the area that I actually live in. I live really close by. And then I teach in Mount Lake Terrace, which I'm actually contracted as a teacher there. So it's not my own school, but they're my students. And a lot of those students do come to classes with me as well. So it's kind of like a...
Is that through the town Parks and Rec, or is it from a dance studio?
It's through the Parks and Rec. Yeah.
Cool.
Which I started with that when I first moved to the area, and I was so appreciative of it because it was a definite paycheck.
Yes.
Every week I knew I would actually get paid for my time, which is really, I think, beneficial when you're first starting out. It's nice to know, even if you're not making money from your other places, that at least I'm going to get something to teach there. And I've been really happy with that program. There were other teachers that used to teach it, and they were loosely associated with other schools, but they weren't necessarily TCs. And just kind of the focus on what they were teaching wouldn't have been exactly what I would have focused on. So it was a bit of a transition, I think, for some of the dancers that had been there for a little bit. And we did lose a number of those students, but I think they just weren't used to more of a rigor of a structured schedule.
Yep.
So now it's actually gotten to the point where it's very flourishing again. So that's exciting. And then I teach in a place in Mukilteo as well. So that's for the Seattle area. I'm basically in North Seattle, and these are all other little towns. And I have my classes generally divided into more non-champ and champ currently.
Yep.
And except for Mukilteo. Mukilteo is just kind of a mix of everything, except this year I'm actually adding a teams class. So that's been kind of my next goal for the school, is starting to build to be able to send teams to Oireachtas.
Yep.
So this year we're not doing teams at Oireachtas, but I'm just starting the program to start.
Very smart.
So, yeah, it'd be way too much this year. It'd be a mess. But yeah, just starting to teach them more about team dancing, the basics, like holding your arms well, and then that will help too for doing more shows. I just want more pieces that are like easy to pull on, that dancers like know and have clean, and then you can just do shows a little bit more frequently.
Yep.
And then in addition to that, in terms of classes for the school, I do a FESH, I call it a FESH class, and it really started when I had students start going to competitions. And because of the balance of working and having a studio and trying to schedule with other places, because that's also a really difficult part, is like getting time in with the places that I'm renting
to actually
be able to have classes, which you also are exposed to a number of different organizational styles and how people communicate with you differently, which is really eye-opening. And I just wouldn't have been able to always get more classes in, but I would do about 2 times a month a long workshop for any dancers that are planning on competing. So, and other dancers can go to it too. It's just more rigorous. It's for those who are competing. So we do that. And then this year I'm adding, I started it this summer a little bit, a period of time where people can sign up for privates as well. And that's kind of how I'm fitting in more time, but also maintaining a little bit of personal time, because those aren't every weekend. Those aren't every week. It's some weekends, which I'm sure parents appreciate as well, because they're not giving up all their weekends.
Exactly.
And I'm not giving up
all my weekends. And you shouldn't.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I think the whole renting space issue is probably a good point to jump to next, because I started that way too, and only moved to our own space when I felt like we needed to move. Like, you're looking around going, ooh, in a year from now, this is not going to work. So I feel like you know when you need to move, but then, and it's great because the overheads aren't usually that high, and they maintain the space, and that part of it is great. But then the downside is scheduling and having to deal with like facility managers and all of that. So I don't know if you've had any good stories there from either something that's gone really well or something that hasn't gone very well that other people could learn from.
The first one that's gone really well is actually working with a ballet school. So one of the places in Edmonds I rent from, it's the Olympic Ballet School, and they're located, kind of confusing, they're actually located inside of a recreation pavilion, but they own certain rooms. So this rec center was an old school.
Okay.
And so they own certain studios, but they have the lovely floor, like the nice floor, they have the bars, they have the mirrors. It's also a beautiful location in Edmonds because it overlooks the water. So you can see the sound, you can see the fairies like in the mountains. That's really nice. I like windows and studios. That's like a personal thing that's really important to me.
You would hate my studio then.
Oh, yeah. I just need to know what time of day it is. I think that's just.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they have really kindly allowed us to make marks all over one studio. So, you know, inevitably the hard shoes are going to make marks on floors.
Yeah.
They just do. And even soft shoes with leather, like if they're nicely polished or new, like occasionally you are going to get some scuffs.
Yep.
On the floor. And they just basically have given us that studio, and they're like, you can do whatever you want to it. When we need to use another studio though, then they're more specific. And I didn't even realize that they had done this until one day we were talking about like scheduling another time, and they were like, well, we only have this studio available, but we can't allow you to scuff that one. And I was like, oh, you've just been allowing us to scuff this floor? And they're like, yeah, we just let you kind of, we're okay with that one being messy, but we want to keep these ones pristine. So that's been a really nice relationship in terms of like, they've kind of embraced that.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's like they understand, because I feel like some facility managers are kind of like, oh, you do what? Like, all right, sure. And then they get mad when they realize that hard shoes can do damage.
Oh, yeah. Which is, that's what happened actually in our Mukilteo studio. So our Mukilteo studio is also a, actually all the places I teach are technically like rec pavilions. So this one's another recreation center. And they have a studio that's called their dance studio, but it's like a weird tile floor, but it's not really slippery. And they got upset that we were marking it. And it's this brand new building too. And I'm like, you made a dance studio with flooring that's not actual dance flooring. And then the person contacted me that I worked with, the facility manager, and he said, well, maintenance is getting really upset with the scuffs. You can't be scuffing it. So we're going to move you into the art studio. It's a concrete floor, but we'll bring in mirrors. And I was like, no, no, no. We can't, I can't allow dancers, any kids to be dancing on concrete floors. And so I put my foot down on that. So we have, I guess that's part of it too. You just have to be really flexible, especially when you're renting from other places. So I have basically Marley floor that I store in a closet there, and every class I roll it out.
That's exactly what I did too.
Yeah. And it's a pain because, I mean, you're rolling out Marley and trying to tape it every class. But you just have to be flexible if you want dancers to be able to dance in the space. Yeah, so it's hard. I think the longer you have relationships with places, the easier it gets. You kind of learn how that manager works, and then you kind of learn their schedule, and then they know you, so they're more willing to like make different concessions for you. I think that's the big thing, is just like longer term relationships, learning how to work with them and being really upfront. And then I would also, my one big suggestion to people is, be like, don't be afraid to just be on top of people, because if you try to be too polite, not saying be rude, but if you let things go for too long, they're not gonna get back to you.
Yep, agree.
Yeah,
completely. And the other thing that, as you're talking before, it sounds to me like you have a very clear school identity. You kind of know what you want the outcome to be, and whether the students are really in on that or not, it doesn't even really matter. Because one of the big messages that I keep preaching is that there's room for all of us, because we're all doing this differently, or at least we should be approaching it all differently. So there are other schools in the Seattle area, like you mentioned. But if you could sum it up, what is your unique twist or your style or whatever you want to call kind of your school's unique identity?
The way that I've always said it, and I've been thinking more about it recently, and it always came to me at the very beginning, but I say that I instruct dancers in traditional, artistic, and competitive Irish dancing, because to me, those three things are essential.
Yep.
And I think that sometimes focus can happen more in one area versus the other. And I wanted to always develop a holistic dancer and be able to give them the, pass on the tradition. That's really important to me, is like passing on the history and the legacy of it. So that's why tradition's in there. I want them to know all their traditional dances. I want them to be able to dance them in a traditional style. So I don't want to see the Molino, I hope I said that right.
Yeah, you did.
Okay, sorry. I don't want to see the Molino, St. Patrick's Day, or Blackbird performed like a CLRG dancer.
Yep.
Like, that is butchering it for me. So when I teach that to my dancers, I expect them to dance that properly.
Yep.
Same with the traditional dance for any traditional sets. They should be able to dance it with the traditional style. I want them to be competitive and to be successful technically, but then I also want them to embrace the artistic side.
I love that. Kind
of, it's very holistic. Like, I even at the dance camps, I taught them a little bit of Tin Whistle, which I'm sure all the families are super happy with me
right now. Right. It's like when we were in third grade, we had to learn the recorder, and I'm sure our parents hated that too.
Oh, yeah. My husband didn't like me practicing either. He was like, please stop. It's too late. It's loud. It's noisy. But those things are important to me, like learning, being able to develop that connection with the music, because especially that is a big, and I know I said it before, but that's a really big thing that I think is missing here on the West Coast. It's just there isn't that immersion into the Irish culture.
Yeah.
So they aren't connected with Irish music. They haven't heard it all their life. So I always try to, like, when we're doing our warm-ups and things, like, be putting on trad music that's not fesh music.
Yep, I used to do that too.
Yeah, because it's just, they should hear it. They learn it better. I teach them, like, we have little music lessons every once in a while where we talk about, like, the difference between a slip jig versus a reel versus a jig.
Yeah.
Musically. Yeah, because I just think those things are important. So I guess it's developing a holistic dancer.
Yeah, I love that. And how early do you start kind of putting them through each of those three tracks? Like, if you had a class of beginners, how do you approach that philosophy with them?
So new beginners, I'm focusing more on the competitive because I view
just
it.
Just like technique and learning the basics.
So I view that's the time to develop the foundation. But through those classes, because my classes are fairly mixed in levels, which I got the idea from actually from dancing with Linda.
Yep.
Because I find that young kids learn a lot from seeing.
They definitely do. They absorb a lot.
Yeah. And there's just that like inspirational push as well. Like they see the older dancers or the, you know, the more advanced dancers. Doing things. But anyway, so our classes are mixed. So about once a quarter or like every other month, I usually do one class where we're not necessarily like going through all their dances, but all the dancers are learning about music. We start talking then about more creative dance or choreography and like how to choreograph things. So I allow them time to create their own pieces, but I give them constraints or improvise. And the best book for that is actually Anne Green Gilbert. She has, I think it's called Creative Movement or Creative Dance. She's actually from Seattle too, but she has a whole book about how to teach creative dance.
I am going to order that after we get off this call.
It is amazing because there's so many different ideas on things to do. And kids love them. Like adults are a little scared of it because it's like, oh, I have to improvise things. But so I start them at a young age, like kind of sometimes doing things like that. And then once they start learning their hard shoe, I always start them with their heavy jig. And then they will learn their St. Patrick's Day next.
I do the same.
Yeah. So they start learning the traditional dances before they learn actually a hornpipe. Because I kind of stick to the same rhythm.
Yeah.
Like, let's just keep you with that rhythm for right now. And then once you have that, we can talk about a hornpipe.
It's super interesting to me because I feel like we have fairly similar philosophies, but we approach them differently. And I hope that the listeners take away that there's no one correct way to do things. Yeah. I think all of us always kind of come in, or I think this is me generalizing about the Irish dance population. So I'm sorry if I offend anyone, but I feel like everyone comes in with almost like the, well, I know how to do it the best, or I know, you know, the way to do this or that or whatever it is, but there isn't.
Yeah.
And we can learn a lot from each other, which is really why I do this. And maybe you can even help settle a debate that Annabelle and I have been having all summer. We are trying to figure out the quote unquote best way to teach kids how to find the one in the music. Because I don't know about you, like growing up, I just figured it out eventually.
Yeah.
No one ever taught me.
Yeah, and Trey, I don't actually teach my students the one. I guess I just count it and then they start figuring it out.
Yeah, and it's interesting because she was teaching with me and, you know, we would do the same. We'd clap it, we'd say it, and they always want to just start counting like whenever they feel like. And we're like, no, you have to wait for the one. And they're looking at us like, the one? What's the one? And we're like, I don't know how to teach you that in a week.
Yeah, a week would be hard. I am trying to think how I would teach that. I guess I would, because I've always heard it. I mean, obviously you hear it more musically, but I guess you can kind of hear usually when a tune is coming to the end.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So there's like the middle where it's usually flowing. And then sometimes usually in between that 8 bars, there's like 4 bars. And then sometimes there's just like a definite conclusion.
Well, yeah. And Annabelle was talking about how, you know, there's the repeated phrases, you know, in the A part or the B part. And then you're kind of waiting for that part that is like how you said, the end or the conclusion, but it's like the part that starts to be just that little bit different. And then, you know, it's starting over again.
Yeah. And there's actually one tune by, I think it's Anton and Sully who play it. It's one of their heavy jigs for like the traditional heavy jigs. And to me, sometimes the fourth beat sounds like the one, like they're, the way that they played that tune, it just, that one takes
a head wreck.
Think about it. Cause I'm like, wait, where are they now in the, I'd have to, now I'm going to pay attention to that.
We're still trying to figure out the, like I said, the quote unquote best way. Cause I'm sure there's multiple ways, but it seems to be a thing that everyone just kind of figures out.
Yeah.
Eventually, after listening to a lot of music or becoming familiar with the different tunes.
Yeah, I would say that would be the big thing for me. It's just like, they would just need to listen to a lot more of it. And then eventually they just like get used to hearing it.
Yeah. But I love that you incorporate the music and the choreography on a regular basis. I usually have them do a little bit of improv and like group choreographing during our summer camps, but not through the regular year. But I think I need to go back in and use that exercise more, because they usually impress me with how good of a job that they do.
Well, they come up with stuff that I'm like, oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
We may use that later. Yeah. And it's a good break. Like looking at, I use it sometimes just as like a break week. Like you've done a lot of hard work, or like they've ended a competition. And I'll just be like, we need a break.
Yeah.
I view it as our like fun week, which a lot of them love it. They get really excited. They have a good time during it. And I think improv for Irish dancers is really challenging. I know I would have struggled with it.
And I did even in college.
Yeah. Cause it's hard. Cause I feel like the way that Irish dancing is taught so much is like, you know what you're doing, you do it, you're going to do it again. And like, you're told what you dance.
Exactly.
So the second that you're like put on the spot to just dance anything is terrifying.
Right. You almost don't know what to do because you've always been told what to do and how to do it.
Mm-hmm. So I started realizing it when I would do like smaller performances and just like treble reels. And then when I would have my own school and I'm performing these treble reels, sometimes I wouldn't exactly have a treble reel in mind beforehand. I may like have a few moves, but I just got really good at like making it up on the spot.
Yeah.
Really out of probably like laziness for like spending the time beforehand, making sure that I knew what I was doing. But I got good at it in the sense where it was like, I would just kind of feel like what I felt like doing. And I started working with some older dancers on it and being like, right, let's improv treble reels so that if you have to, you could do this. And I would give them like 2 bars, like they could start with a bang treble back or something like that they know. And then I would have them improv. And some of them could do it. And other ones I remember would just sit there. And it was like, I told them their death sentence. They were fully panicked. And I was like, okay. Let's try this again. It doesn't matter what you do, but it's definitely developing that comfort. So that's why I started doing that more with younger kids. Cause I was like, if I don't teach you this skill earlier on, you're definitely not going to be comfortable with it when you're older.
Yep. Agree. And I think my biggest improv, I guess, lesson came from, we had Colin Dunn for a whole year, and I was in second year at the time, and
she
did like a whole semester with us on just improv, and it was terrifying.
Yeah.
It was like the class I dreaded going to, but it was really helpful. And he had always said, you know, kind of while you're thinking, always go back to like a common phrase or like have a, you know, have a common element in your pocket so that way you can go back to it when you're kind of done playing with something else, which was very helpful.
Yeah. He's amazing. I appreciate my time with him.
Yeah.
I definitely found him, like you, terrified and slightly dreaded that class. But the more, I guess, the farther I go, in my career. I appreciate what he taught a lot more. He
yep.
worked with us. I'm sure he worked with you on moving from your core and making your body looser.
Yeah.
With your legs.
I can picture his knee bend now.
Yeah. Having to sit there and just like
bob.
Bend and bop for I don't know how long that was. But I appreciated more what he was doing after actually two injuries. So I first, actually it was in my fourth year, I hurt my back. I was bending incorrectly. And when I would kick my leg, I would have a slight bend, which is why I get my pet peeve with dancers is when they kick their leg really high and their bend and their back is bent.
Yeah.
Not only because it's not technically correct, but you are doing so much future damage to your body. And I messed up my back and I still have some issues with it, because I didn't use my core properly.
Yep.
So I had to go to physical therapy for a long time and just like learn to lift my leg with my core and use my core, which is exactly what Colin Dunn was talking about. And then after tearing my meniscus, I was training again with the same physical therapy team and talking about how to jump. Because in Irish dancing, it always looks like you should just jump with the straight leg and land as locked as possible. But that hurts.
I mean, yeah, you have to absorb the force somewhere.
Mm-hmm. And so I worked for weeks on just learning to jump and relax into it, which after doing it over and over, and I told my physical therapist, I was like, I had a teacher in college who was working on this with Irish dancing, and I should have taken that on board a little bit more. So I actually now have started teaching my students how to jump, because
yep.
I think that's so important. And I let them absorb it into their heels without dropping. I say, you want to yep. let it go down and then push back up.
Yep. Yeah. It's like taking it through your ankle and arch.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
To absorb it, which purely I learned from my mistakes.
And well, at least you have that personal anecdote to give them every time.
Yeah.
You better do it the way I'm teaching you, or you'll end up messing up your back and your knees.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I told that to one little girl. She was looking at me, and I was like, do you remember why I couldn't dance for a while with my knee? And she was like, mm-hmm. It's like, because I did this incorrectly. And that's why you're doing it correctly now. So, yeah, it's a little offside anecdote.
Yeah, no, I mean, and we ended up talking a lot about your teaching methods, which I really loved. And for everyone who's either thinking about becoming a studio owner, but isn't sure they can do it as like their side hustle for the first while. And I mean, and I feel like calling it a side hustle is even like a disservice to what it is, because I'm sure for you, it's all consuming.
Mm-hmm.
So what does a like Monday to Friday look like in your life and your schedule, juggling your job and then your studio?
So I work at least an hour away, actually.
Wow. Which is okay.
Far, which Seattle is very spread out, but I actually work very far north, which the eventual goal is not to work that far north. However, I drive pretty far north to get to work. And then I'm working a full day at a museum as an educator, which is a mix of administrative roles in it, but it's also working with tour groups, planning engagement and programs. So that's a big area of mine. And actually I'm receiving, a slight promotion to become, instead of just an education associate, I'm actually becoming a learning and engagement coordinator. So
Cool. That's
the area that I'm kind of moving into. But yeah, so I wake up in the morning. I usually always check my email, not my work email. I will say this, I'm very good at stepping away from my museum job. And when I am not at the museum or not working, I really don't check email. I'm very good at stepping away from that. But I always keep up on the school. So I always wake up, always check the email, make sure there's nothing, no fires to put out.
Yep.
Make sure we're all good there. I haven't been as good about marketing, but an area that I was implementing for a while was trying every day to at least put an Instagram photo on something, do something with marketing just to like get the school out a little bit more. Then I go to work, and then I basically work the full day, and then I would drive to wherever I'm teaching. So Mondays I drive down to Edmonds, Tuesdays I'm driving to Mount Lake Terrace, and I'm working in Edmonds until about 8:30 at night. So that's a full day. I go home. Tuesdays I'm working till 7:30. So that's a little bit better. And then Wednesdays is my day off. I'm starting to think about adding a class, but trying to make it a little bit earlier. So starting next week, actually, my museum schedule will be a little bit more regular. Right now it's a little bit irregular due to programs and just with the way the job's working. But the director and I are working on like maintaining a normal schedule. So nice. So we're actually going to be working remotely on Wednesdays, which I love those days because I can work from home. I can sometimes pack in more hours on that day to work less hours next.
Yeah, that's really nice. Or just to even have a day that you don't have to drive to the museum.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I get so excited. My cat loves it, too. He loves when I'm home. But so we do that. I do that. Wednesdays are off. Thursdays, then I work again. Then I drive to Mukilteo. But that's just one class plus a little bit more teens. Then Fridays I have off, except if I do private. So privates will be like Friday night. And then I do occasionally have to work weekends for the museum, depending on different events that we have. But weekends are when, like Saturday would normally be when I would do a FESH class. And what I try to do is stack my weekends in such a way that my plan is for like privates, that those would happen on the Friday, and then that next Saturday would be the FESH class. And I just do that so that basically if I'm going to give up a weekend, I'm just going to give it up and then have another weekend for myself. And I think the big thing from dealing with this balance is, one, I do try to give myself time with my family. So usually the nights when I'm done teaching, those are for me. I try to take those off. I always get to my dance studios early, and that's where I do a lot of my prep work. So I always plan out my classes there. And then weekends are a big time for me to get other administrative tasks done. Certain nights, obviously, I have to be doing a little bit more like answering emails. But I think the big takeaway from the balance is just general acceptance. I have learned to accept that my school will not be as big, will not have as many students, most likely will not. I don't have the same capabilities as somebody who has a full-time job. And I think I've just had to learn to accept that and to stop comparing myself to schools that would.
Yeah. And it's so hard not to.
Yeah. It definitely is. You're like, oh, that person has this many. And look, they've been around for 3, you know, maybe similar amount of years, but you're like, wait, they weren't doing a master's. They're not working.
Yep.
They're not, you know, there's not that same time struggle. And so I think a big thing is focusing more for me on the quality I can give my students versus quantity. So I'm not trying to build to a huge amount.
And
I have on my list, like, this next year I'm planning on actively recruiting for an assistant teacher, because it is getting to that point where, since I don't have many classes, they are getting very big with mixed levels.
Yep.
And I just need someone with like little beginners. And I had one student that they're going off to college, but they helped me this summer. And I was like, this is amazing.
I know. The first time I had Annabelle come, I was like, how am I ever going to teach alone again?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm terrified for starting off again. I'm like, what am I going to do? So I think getting help, that's a big part of it, because that will obviously ease a bit of the burden and stress. But the big thing for me is acceptance and making sure I'm passionate about it. Like, I love teaching. I would give up the full job of working in a museum to be able to teach. I would happily do that. I do love museums. So that is an area that I'm very passionate about, which is also very important, I think, if you're doing another job.
Yeah,
you have to be happy with what you're doing. There is obviously the the definite like side hustle to make sure that you can afford to be doing this.
Yep.
But then there's doing it for passion, which I do both, but my priority is my school.
Yep.
And the last little thing about that I, one quick thing is I worked with a teacher, Ann Burke, at UL, and she told me, because it was my fourth year of college, and I told her I got my teachers, and we were talking about what I would do the following year, and I said, well, should I do a master's? Should I pursue this, or should I just do teaching? And she actually told me, she was like, do both. Don't just teach. She said, you will be happier if you do both, because you will not be focusing on just gaining beginners as much. She said, to have a full school, if you want to be financially stable, you need those beginners to basically pay to have your time with the champions.
Yep.
But by building up all those beginners, you don't have all of that time anymore to just give to your champion dancers. So her point of view was the idea that if you had that financial stability from another job, you could give your time to just those champions. Now it's very stressful, so I don't know if I think of that fully, but yeah, so that's the, I don't know, that's how I balance it. I give myself vacations. I'm very good about that. Summer, we cut back.
Yeah.
Last summer, I got married and we had our honeymoon, so I had someone teach for me. And then this summer, I taught, but I decided I'm not doing that again. I need summers off from teaching, and then I'll need like a week off from work, because recharging is just so important. Meaning I'll step away for a while. I wouldn't be able to do it if I don't have that time to be like replanning, making goals for the next year, structuring the entire year. And I can't do that when I'm tired.
Yeah. And I totally underappreciated like the value in stepping away. Mm-hmm. Until like last year, when you can't give your best self when you're like stuck on the hamster wheel.
Yeah, you need time away. And the other part with that I always thought about was I had seen dance teachers burn out. My dance teacher, I thought she burned out. And I had seen other teachers definitely reach that point. And I was always really worried about that. And I always thought about what was most important to me to ensure that I didn't burn out. And first of all, it was taking breaks. But secondly, I thought that I always need to keep myself dancing.
Yep.
Something that I'm interested in, because if I'm not keeping myself interested in it, how am I going to convey that passion to students?
Yep. That's a really good point.
Yeah. And it's hard. And this is an area that I have really struggled with, because as a TC, you can't just show up at another studio and dance. And sometimes that's just what I want to do. Like, I just want someone to tell me what to do.
Yeah.
And you can't do that. And running a school where it's just myself.
Yeah.
I'm not touring. I can't really tour. I've never really been interested in the tour life. Like, I think it's amazing the people that do it, but I find it a little too unstable for me. I like...
Yep. Same.
More. Yeah. And it's definitely, I think it's good if you know that about yourself. Like,
yep.
Do that. But yeah, I've definitely been struggling with like, how do I keep myself dancing? And I've tried to do some ballet classes, but then what happens is when you're teaching so many nights a week and you have that like one day where you're like,
yeah, then you don't want to go.
Yeah. And then all the classes you could go are while you're teaching.
Yep. So
it's an ongoing struggle. There's definitely no easy answer. I think that's the big thing about balance, is you kind of figure out what works for you, and being really disciplined about it is pretty good. I view it just as like when I was going to school, like in high school, you had your school time and then you had your dance teaching time or your dancing time.
Yep.
I kind of view the balance like that, but there's so many things and it's not simple, but like I said before, I think acceptance is the big thing about it to take from it.
Cool. So yeah, you already answered my next question, which was going to be like what your advice would be for people kind of looking to do that. And I guess to go along with that, what has been your biggest challenge either balancing the two or just having a school in general?
I think it's I think it's just part of the struggles of actually owning a school. Like, there, I mean, this whole podcast is a lot about like that CEO, the business side. Right?
Yep.
And I think that that is downplayed before you become a teacher.
Which I've heard over and over and over and over again. We all go in being like, yeah, I want to be a dance teacher. And then like it hits you like a bus of all the stuff that maybe you sort of had an idea that you'd have to do it, but not like at the pace and volume that it has to be done at.
Yeah. And just like knowing what taxes you need to file quarterly, still figuring that out. Like, that is a headache. I have to admit, I'm like, I fully dislike that. But I mean, there's certain things like that. You just don't, you're like, oh, I have to do this and I have to do that. But the part that I've found with owning a school is that as it grows, like, it's one thing when I started it and it was like a struggle just to have students and then you're keeping them in. But as you grow, you have to change your organizational structure. Like, things are going to have to change. It can't remain constant. So I think it's really important to always look ahead. So like this summer, I sat down and I did a 5-year plan. Like, what are my goals each year for 5 years? And then what do I need to do to maintain that? And then building in that like personal life goals as well. So like, do I eventually want to have a child? Like, when would that maybe fit? Obviously, those are discussions with your significant others and families too. That's not just on your own. But I mean, like, those are thoughts that eventually will need to go into it. And then, you know, looking at your other job, where do you want to grow with that? And that was actually something that I struggled more with originally, because I always knew where I wanted to get eventually with the school, like the ultimate eventual goal.
Yep.
But then I remember in interviews being asked like, oh, well, where do you want this job to go? And sometimes it's kind of hard because it's like, because the dance school was so much of my passion, I had more of a trajectory for that versus the other job, which that I've reflected more on. And I eventually see that becoming more, hopefully, of a lecturing position at a local university, which would tie in nicely with like flexibility of being able to teach.
Yeah.
So I think it's like marrying the two. And then, and this is the first summer that I've honestly thought about, could I become a full-time dance teacher? Do I want that? And that's not something I ever thought I wanted.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's a thought where like, maybe it would just be a little bit easier. I could devote myself a little bit better to it, and I could handle the growing pains a bit more of like, you're growing, you're getting more students, you could more easily add classes. When it gets time to rent my own studio, I'm not only using it for 7 hours a week, I could actually use it for more time, because that's part of it too, especially in the Seattle area. Rent is crazy expensive.
I bet.
So just finding a place that I know I can cover my costs per month, have enough classes that I'm using it, and hopefully at that point then have some people to help me, and then being able to delegate a little bit more.
Yeah. And yeah, it's a tough thing to navigate. And I think you kind of touched on it in what you just said. Like, a lot of times it's very hard to keep on top of all the moving parts as you grow, because you're trying to plan for things that may or may not happen, or like, you're trying to look down the line at what the growing implications will be, like, for better, for worse, or like just things that come up. And it's something that's very hard to be prepared for until you're already in it, I feel like.
Oh yeah. And the other part with that I started, that I actually did this year, is I opened up, like, I did an evaluation for parents. Like, they were able to evaluate me in the school, which sounds really scary, but in the job that I do in museum, we evaluate all the time. Like, everything's evaluated. All your programs are evaluated. Like, you have to know whether things are successful.
Yep.
Apart from you just being like, well, I thought that was okay. So
yeah, because that's the thing. Your perception might not be what other people see. And it is, it's anytime, I feel like, doesn't matter what it is, when you open yourself up to feedback, you do open up the possibility that someone's going to say something that you're not going to like, but it's almost like you have to be detached from the personal feeling about it and look at it like objectively of how you can improve their experience, I guess.
Yeah. And it's hard because your school is your baby.
Yep.
In a lot of ways, and you have to be able to separate parts from it. And another big part that I've learned, especially this past year, is like, just accept when you made a mistake. Like, there were times this year I wasn't able to keep on top of everything.
Yep.
Communicate everything as clearly as I should have. And apologizing for it to families. Yeah. And I think that that's hard to do, but at the same time, it's better if you just, you just got to suck it up and,
yep,
you
and say, own it.
Sorry, I dropped the ball there. I didn't communicate this well enough. But I mean, I was pleasantly surprised by the evaluation. They were all very nice comments and people are enjoying it. So those are good things. But I think that's good too, just to like make sure that everyone's happy. And then with that, and this is one little, I think Linda said it to me once. And this is something about just starting a school as well, is know that students are going to leave you.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And you can't take that personally either.
You cannot take that personally. And you have to think that one's going to walk out the door, but another will walk in. There always, yep, is going to be another one, even when that one leaves. And I, yep, think the first little bit of time, it's really hard also because as much as I never would want to think of a student as a dollar sign, when you're trying to break even, you are looking at every student as a dollar sign towards breaking even. But being okay with like, okay, well, yeah, no, that wasn't a good fit for us, for both, yep, of us. It's good that they left.
Yeah.
I'm going to struggle a little bit, but we'll be okay.
Yep. Because that's, yes, the thing, is like, and a lot of people when they're looking at, you know, oh, I have X number of students, I have Y number of students. Like, I'd rather have less students that are genuinely happy to be there than have, yeah, X plus 20 or X plus 50 that are pains in the butt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Your happiness is much better when,
yeah, no, seriously, like, you can't put a dollar sign on that.
No, no, you can't. It's, I think the one mistake I made when I was first starting is I had, it was a mother and a daughter pair, and they asked me whether or not they could take class together. And these were, like, a first couple of my students. I was like, yeah, of course. No, it didn't go well at all. And I was like, big mistake. Another part of that, too, is, like, looking at, especially when you don't have too much time to give, like prioritizing what you want to teach, not like content wise, but really who you want to teach.
Yeah.
So I chose early on, especially, and I started putting my foot down on this last year, I do not teach beginner adults at all. Yep. I don't, maybe eventually if I have another teacher, but I view that, as much as I think it's worthwhile that, yeah, it'd be great if they learn to dance, the experience that I've had with it, they're not as consistent. They don't show up all the time. Then the memory's not there. There's not the like drive that you would get from a student.
Yeah.
And you're not really maintaining a long time student that way.
Yep.
And so when I realized, I was like, nope, that's not for me. I'll take adults who have previously danced, and I have a number of I had a number, and some of them have moved on, that came out of retirement, and then one's like competing now again, which is, I applaud her all the time for actually like coming out of retirement and being in her, yeah, 30s to do that. But that's the only time I teach adults.
And
but that was like,
I hope that people are listening to this and like realizing that it is okay to have, like, you should have a target market. You should have, mm-hmm, a student in mind that like, that's who you want to teach. And especially when you're trying to manage a lot of different things, it's okay to cut down on who that ideal student is. And it's not necessarily a personal statement or a, you know, like you said, it's not that you don't, you know, wish you could. It's just right now, yeah, that is not your ideal student. And, yeah, I'm sure there are somewhere else that that is their ideal student. And,
oh,
hopefully,
yeah,
they'll,
yeah,
be happy there.
And there's plenty of schools in the area that teach adults, so I use that as well. Like, if someone comes to me, I'll be like, I don't, but I know that these people do.
Yep.
And I'm happy to refer,
yep,
to other teachers.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Is there anything that we didn't talk about that you would like to talk about?
Let me just check my, I made a list of ideas of things that I knew that I had to deal with. No, I think that's about it. I think a big part that's just really important for people that are close to you is you still need to make sure to prioritize them. So I know that I try to prioritize, I shouldn't say I try, I prioritize my husband. And I think it's important to maintain that relationship as well. And like making sure that they're supportive of what you're doing. And when they're supportive of what you're doing, it goes a long ways. And I think that's really important because there's no way you could embark on this if you don't have the support of those who are close by you. And then, but in return with that, you have to sometimes be okay with letting something go to be able to support them or to be with them a little bit. So I know, I think there was like one time it was my husband and my dad was like, oh, you could do blah, 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 blah. And my husband was like, that's a great idea. However, I want to see her sometimes. So I think it's important to also take that in mind, especially when you're balancing work or even if you don't have.
Yeah, because I know that that's a balance that I still struggle with.
Yeah, it's hard.
Is not let the studio be all-consuming, even in the hours where it doesn't need to be.
Oh, yeah, and that was the other thing. I do not give my phone number to many families.
Smart.
I am very private about that. Certain parents get it. The ones that are, like, really competing or, like, need to get a hold of me. And it hasn't gone badly yet.
Yeah.
And I've had some parents ask me, like, why don't you give it? And it's like, no, you have my email.
Because you, don't need to talk to me.
Yeah.
It's not personal, but you don't need to talk to me.
At 11 o'clock at night. Like, I don't want to get a text from you. I love you all, but no.
Yeah. Nope. Not at 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah. So that's another way that I like.
Very smart.
That's my one
boundary. I wish I had done that sooner. Because once it's out, it's out.
Oh, yeah. Once you really start.
Yep.
Yeah, and then you get texts about other things. I've had like one person who was a bit younger and they misuse that a bit, but I just kind of stop responding to certain things and I'd be like, no, we're not doing that. Like, that's weird. But yeah, I think that's it. That's all.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I was so happy that we were able to do this and I hope everyone listening really takes away that it is possible to juggle both.
It is. Definitely.
It's difficult, but it can be done.
Yeah.
Cool.
So thank you. And if anyone needs any help with anything, they're welcome to reach out to me as well.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on TCRG to CEO Radio.